This is Audible.
Listening Library presents Magnus Chase, a Hotel Valhalla Guide to the Norse Worlds, Your Introduction to Deities, Mythical Beings, and Fantastic Creatures, by Rick Riordan. Read for you by Kieran Culkin. For all in Harriar, may you prove worthy of Valhalla. Hotel Valhalla. A word from the manager. Dear valued guest, on behalf of the staff, welcome to Hotel Valhalla. We recognize that there were other options for your afterlife. We thank you for your selfless sacrifice that landed you here among Odin's chosen warriors instead of elsewhere. You will encounter many powerful deities, magical beings, and fantastic creatures as an Inherii. You may have questions about them. You may decide to ask me those questions. In fact, if more than a millennium of experience is any indication, you will ask me. Of course, as manager of this fine establishment, I'll be happy to answer them. But I'll be even happier if you consult this guide before you ring the front desk. I do have a hotel to run, after all. With insightful interviews and scintillating stories, insider information, and random remarks, this book allows you to explore the lives of our world's inhabitants from the comfort of your room. As you listen, you may wish to ponder the possibility of your own heroic tale finding a page in future editions of this book. All publications and the proceeds thereof will become the property of Hotel Valhalla. Will your deeds earn you a coveted seat at the Thane's table? Or will they be less than satisfactory, securing your role as servant to those who answer Odin's call? If the former, I will be the first to welcome you, for I myself am a Thane. If the latter, please confer with Hunding the bellhop about your duties. For now, though, sit back, relax, and enjoy your ongoing death, your daily resurrection, and your everlasting stay here. Helgi, manager of Hotel Valhalla since 749 CE. What in the worlds? By Hunding, Hotel Valhalla bellhop since 749 CE. To be honest, I'm not great with words, so I wasn't keen on writing anything for this book. But Helgi told me to, and I have to do what Helgi tells me because, well, that's a story for another time. Maybe someday I'll write it down, but probably not. I'm supposed to tell you where we live. We live in a tree. It's a really, really big tree called Yggdrasil. It has a name because it's important, and all important things have names. I don't know who named it. Come to think of it, I don't know who named anything. Is there a god for that? Yggdrasil is also known as the World Tree. Not only is that easier to pronounce, it's a spot-on description because the branches hold 9, count 'em, 9 worlds. Asgard, Vanaheim, Midgard, Alfheim, Jotunheim, Nidavellir, Muspelheim, Niflheim, and Helheim. When I first joined the hotel staff, I had trouble remembering their names, so I came up with this handy mnemonic device. A very mean ant just nibbled my nose hair. A stands for Asgard, V for Vanaheim, and so on. Get it? You can use my special sentence if you want, just leave me chocolate in return. Now, a little bit about each world. Asgard. This is the realm of the Aesir, warrior gods and goddesses. These deities, Odin, Thor, and Frigg, among others, reside in palaces made of silver, gold, and other precious materials. Hotel Valhalla, the beloved afterlife residence of the Inheriar, the soldiers in Odin's eternal army, is within this world. Vanaheim, home of the Vanir, the nature gods and goddesses. This world is warm and sunny, filled with lush green meadowland. Folkvangr, the flower child afterlife equivalent of Valhalla, is within this realm. The Vanir goddess Freya rules over Folkvangr from her place Sesrumnir, or Hall of Many Seats, which is an upside-down ship crafted of gold and silver. Midgard. If you are human, this is where you once lived. Midgard rests in Yggdrasil's branches and is connected to Asgard via the Bifrost, a massive bridge constructed from a single rainbow. The city of Boston, Massachusetts, is very close to Yggdrasil's trunk, making it a useful point of entry to and exit from the other worlds. Alfheim, the home of the Light Elves. Alfheim resembles Midgard in many ways except that elves, not humans, live here, and there is no night. The Vanir god Frey rules over it. Alfheim is kind of an upscale neighborhood, so be on your best behavior if you visit. Otherwise, you might get arrested for loitering or trespassing or just, you know, not being an elf. Jotunheim, the world of the giants, or Jotun, is primarily mountainous, with great drifts of snow, half-frozen rivers and lakes, and, well, giants. Giants are large and not particularly careful about where they step. Be cautious traveling in Jotunheim. I've had more than one friend flattened under a giant's boot. Nidavellir, the underground realm of the dwarves. This world is chilly and dark because the only natural light comes from a special glowing moss. The buildings are equally gloomy, though the furnishings within are one-of-a-kind creations, for dwarves are master craftsmen. If you want to pick up a souvenir, like a magic hammer or a foldable boat, be prepared to pay handsomely. Dwarves take gold, all major credit cards, and your head if you lose a wager with them. One section of Nidavellir is called Svartalfheim, the land of the dark elves. But this isn't really a separate world, and the Svartalfs aren't actually elves. They are dwarves who have some Vanir blood since they descended from Freya. Long story, Freya doesn't like to talk about it. Muspelheim. This is the land where fire giants and demons dwell. Imagine the surface of the sun, populated with angry, heavily armed burning people. Surt, the lord of the fire giants, rules this world and doesn't appreciate visitors. Best to steer clear. Niflheim. An inhospitable, frigid region of mist, ice, and fog. It is where the frost giants often reside. Great place to make an ice sculpture or store meat if you run out of room in your freezer. However, since high summer temperatures hover at around minus 30 degrees Fahrenheit, I'd wear your warmies. Helheim. The dead who don't go to Valhalla or Folkvanger end up here. It's a cold, dark, lifeless place full of miserable souls who died of old age or sickness. To get there, you have to ride down an icy road into the pitch-black valley of death, cross the river Gjol on an iron bridge guarded by a giantess, somehow get across the wall of corpses, and finally arrive at the Hall of Hel, the goddess of the dishonorable dead, where you'll be served famine, hunger, and misery for breakfast, lunch, and dinner. Suffice to say, Helheim rarely makes it on the list of top vacation spots for the Nine Worlds. A few other points of interest? At the roots of Yggdrasil is a magical well of knowledge, overseen by the ancient god Mimir. Or at least Mimir's head, because that's all that's left of him. Drink from the well, and you can learn important stuff. You have to pay Mimir for the drink, though, and the price isn't cheap. Just ask Odin. But I'd wait until he's in a good mood before asking. Travel among the worlds is allowed, though some restrictions may apply. There's one place you shouldn't visit, however, and that's the massive abyss of nothingness called Giningagap. True story. Long ago, before anything was anything, frost from Niflheim spread into Giningagap and met with fire coming from Muspelheim. No big surprise, the frost melted. Some drops turned into a humongous giant named Ymir. A few generations later, Odin and his brothers Vili and Ve killed Ymir and turned his body parts into Midgard's oceans, sky, earth, and plants. Ever since then, the giants have hated the gods. Moral of the story? Avoid Giningagap. You just never know what might happen there. The Gods and Goddesses by Hunding. Me again. Did you think my contribution began and ended with the explanation of the Nine Worlds? Apparently we were both wrong. So, the gods and goddesses. These divine beings permeate all aspects of our cosmos. They belong to one of two tribes, the Aesir or the Vanir. The Aesir are warriors. They dwell in Asgard and handle most aspects of law and order, defending it in battle, maintaining it through their swift and often deadly system of justice, and, on occasion, disrupting it by means of pranks, tricks, and crimes. They cherish loyalty, honor, and a fight-for-what's-right sensibility above all else, except when they are engaged in pranks, tricks, and crimes. A good time to be around the Aesir is on the battlefield. They will always have your back. A bad time to be around the Aesir is when they're drinking mead together. Then the insults start flying, and wow, some of those Aesir insults can make your ears bleed. The more peaceful Vanir oversee the nature side of things, such as fertility, the seasons, crop growth, and the like from their homeworld of Vanaheim. They appreciate groovy, laid-back calm, and finely crafted macrame handbags. The Vanir are not complete pacifists, however. Take the Aesir-Vanir War. According to historic accounts, it was triggered by a sorceress from Vanaheim who some say was Freya herself. The witch traveled the worlds performing elf magic, or Alfseder. She put on a show in Asgard for Odin and the other gods. The Aesir were impressed with her powers until they realized she was using them for one purpose, to obtain their gold. No offense, Freya, but your lust for gold is probably how the rumors about you being the sorceress got started. Her greed offended the Aesir, so they did the only logical thing. They burned her. 3 times, actually. Each time, she popped out of the flames uncharred. Finally, though, she'd had enough. She returned to Vanaheim, posted a 1-star rating for her stay in Asgard, and boom, war erupted. No one knows how long the two tribes fought, but eventually both sides got sick and tired of it. They called a truce. To seal the deal, they did a deity hostage exchange. Freya, Frey, and their dad Njord of Vanaheim for Asgard's Mimir and Honir. I'd like to say that it all worked out fine, but I suspect Mimir would disagree since he got his head cut off for being sassy with the Vanir. And how Freya wound up back in Vanaheim in charge of Folkvanger is anyone's guess. But that's the divine for you. They operate by their own set of rules. Speaking of which, listen on to learn more about the Norse deities. Odin. Type: God. Homeworld: Asgard. Appearance: a weathered warrior, muscular and barrel-chested, close-cropped gray hair and tidy square-cut beard. Eye patch over left eye, right eye is deep blue. Exudes power and wisdom. Family: married to the goddess Frigg and father of many sons, including the god Baldur. Best known for being the All-Father, king of the gods, the god of war and death, and of poetry and wisdom. Oversees Valhalla, where he receives half of those who die bravely in battle, the Inherjar. Can shapeshift. Continually seeking new knowledge and often consults the disembodied head of the wise being Mimir for advice. Author of many books, including his latest, 7 Heroic Qualities. Favorite weapon. Odin is frequently seen with his spear, Gungnir. Told you everything important here has a name. Animal companions. Odin is often accompanied by the wolves Giri and Freki and the ravens Hugin and Munin, who bring him information from all over Midgard. He rides the flying 8-legged steed Sleipnir across the sky and into the underworld. My Sit-Down with Odin by Snorri Sturluson, resident of Hotel Valhalla since 1241 CE. As an author, historian, and sometime poet in life, and a thane in good standing in death, I've had the privilege of conversing with our deities many times over the last centuries. These chats became the basis of my book, The Prose Edda, available for purchase online and in better bookstores, which contains highly readable explanations of our most famous myths and insights about our celebrated heroes. When Helgi told me he was putting a guide to our worlds in every room of the hotel, I assumed he meant my Edda. But apparently, he was looking for something with a more modern flair. He asked if I could recommend someone to interview our top-level gods and goddesses. No doubt he thought the task was beneath me, but I welcomed the opportunity for some one-on-one time with the deities. Naturally, my first conversation was with Odin, the All-Father himself. We met not at the high seat Hlidskjalf, as I'd suggested, but in an out-of-the-way, unassuming Midgard cafe. Editor's note. Snorri Sturluson has had issues with accuracy in the past. To ensure this is not an issue with this and other interviews recorded in this book, a raven scribe accompanied him to his meetings. The transcripts, therefore, include impartial observations as well as the conversations themselves. Snorri Sturluson. Thank you, my lord, for agreeing to talk with me. I'm certain readers will be extremely interested in whatever you say. Odin. Probably. Snorri Sturluson. May I ask my first question? Odin. You just did. Snorri Sturluson, laughing delightedly. Oh, you got me that time. Wise and witty, all in one package. But now to the question. Odin, tell us in your own words, what was it like when you lost your eye? Odin, cheerfully. I didn't lose it, Snorri. I gouged it out with my own fingers. Snorri Sturluson, looking green. Indeed. And, what was that like? Odin, not fun, but I got something worthwhile in exchange for it. Snorri Sturluson. And that was, Odin, this cool eye patch. Snorri Sturluson. Ah, nothing else? Odin. Oh, I got a sip of water from the well of knowledge at Yggdrasil's roots, too. Mimir, the severed head, gave it to me himself. Snorri Sturluson, grandly. And that was the first heroic step on your everlasting quest for wisdom. Odin. Sure, scratches his beard thoughtfully. Makes you wonder, though, doesn't it? Snorri Sturluson, leaning forward. Wonder what, Lord Odin? Odin. What Mimir did with my eye. Shrugs. Snorri Sturluson. A mystery that may never be solved. Speaking of mysteries, you once hanged yourself to gain wisdom. We're all dying to know. Odin. Dying to know! Good one, Snorri! Snorri Sturluson. What? Oh, yes, I see. So, can you tell us the story behind your hanging yourself for 9 days to unlock the secret of runes? Odin. Of course. Pause. I hanged myself for 9 days to unlock the secret of runes. Snorri Sturluson. Yes, but why did you hang yourself? Odin. To unlock the secret of runes. Snorri Sturluson. Yes. Fascinating. Odin. But all that is ancient history, Snorri. As is the tale about how I stole and drank a vat of mead made from Godspittle to become a poet. Snorri Sturluson, looking green. Godspittle. Odin. Well, technically, the mead was made with honey and, well, let's call it a secret ingredient. Winks. Unconfirmed rumors claim the secret ingredient was the blood of Kvasir, a wise god who arose fully formed from a vat of divine spittle. The saliva itself came from the gods and goddesses who took turns loogieing into the vat to seal the truce that ended the Aesir-Vanir War. Two nasty dwarves, Fjallar and Gjallar, killed Kvasir and mixed his blood with honey to make the mead. The term bloodthirsty may originate from this event. Snorri Sturluson. Sounds delicious. Odin. It was nauseating. I spat some out while soaring above Midgard. Drops of it are still down there. A few humans accidentally swallow it now and again. Those who do become world-renowned poets and scholars. Cups hands and shouts toward Midgard. Shakespeare, Longfellow, Silverstein, you're welcome! Snorri Sturluson. World-renowned poets and scholars, eh? Chuckles in a self-deprecating manner. You must think I had a taste of it myself. Odin. That possibility has never once crossed my mind. Snorri Sturluson. Ah, well, ancient history, as you say. Perhaps you'd like to tell us about your latest quest for wisdom and knowledge instead. Odin. I'd like to tell you many things, Snorri. But to answer your question, I've started a spoken word poetry group with some of my Inheriar. Performances every Thursday night in the Feast Hall of the Slain, with light Sirimni refreshments to follow. The Norns are scheduled to make a guest appearance soon, which should prove interesting. Also, I'm taking Zumba classes to understand why in my name they're so popular. Finally, I'm researching the magical symbol known in Midgard as taps first two fingers of right hand against first two fingers of left hand, hashtag. From what I've gleaned, when combined with other words, hashtag has the power to distract the mind from more important matters. If I'm right, I'll make hashtag the subject of my next book. The working title is, wait for it, hashtag. Snorri Sturluson. An inspired choice, Lord Odin. Odin. Yes, I know. Sadly, our interview came to an abrupt conclusion at this point. Odin was called away on a matter of great Aesir importance. He couldn't reveal the nature of the emergency, but I'm quite certain I heard the words hammer and missing. Thor. Type? God. Homeworld? Asgard. Appearance? Bulging tattooed biceps, mountainous shoulders, massive chest, and carrot-colored hair. Wears a rarely washed sleeveless leather jerkin and leather pants, a chainmail vest, a magic belt, and iron gauntlets. His finger knuckles are also tattooed. Family. Thor sired many children. His favorite sons are Magni and Modi. He had other offspring with his wife, the goddess Sive. Best known for being the god of thunder. He has a weekday named after him. His creative cuss words and explosive farts are almost as legendary as his strength, with which he protects humankind. Binge watches Midgard television procedurals in his spare time. Favorite weapon, his mountain-crushing hammer, Mjolnir, which also has the ability to pick up Wi-Fi and broadcast television in high resolution. If he were ever to lose it, he'd miss out on his favorite shows. Oh, and also, the Nine Worlds would be in serious trouble. He has a staff made of giant forged iron as a backup. Animal companions. Tangjaster, meaning teeth grinder. You can call him Otis. And Tongersner, meaning snarler. Just use Marvin. Two talking goats that can be killed, cooked, eaten, and then resurrected. Convenient when you are hungry while on the road. A Hero and a Hammer by John Henry, resident of Hotel Valhalla since 1871 CE. Growing up, I never suspected I was the son of the Norse god of thunder. Why would I? I was born in America. West Virginia, North Carolina, I'm not exactly sure where, around about 1840 or so. Oh, did I mention? My mama was a slave. That means I was a slave, too. And my daddy? In my heart, he was the man my mama was married to, the man who raised me and loved me like his own. But as it turns out, we weren't blood kin. When I was born, Thor sent me an anonymous gift, Mjolnir Jr., a tiny version of his own hammer, though I didn't know what it was then. There was enough of him in me that I took to that hammer like a duck to water, which is to say, I pounded the living daylights out of anything and everything. I ate, farted, and snored like Thor, too. Still do. No cussing, though. My mama raised me right. As I grew, so did that hammer. I reckon that should have been a clue that it was magic. But greater things were on my mind in those days. The Civil War, for one, and later the end of slavery. I was in my 20s when I became a free man. With my mama's blessing in my ears and her kiss on my forehead, I stuck my hammer in my belt and set off to make my way in the world. I'd been traveling for a while when I met up with a man, biggest fella I'd ever seen. Tall and wide, with tattooed arms the size of tree trunks and shoulders like granite. Matted red hair and a thick beard to match. One whiff of him, though, and I was ready to hightail it in the other direction. But something stopped me. He had a hammer in his hand. A hammer just like mine. So I sat with him by his fire. We shared a meal of goat stew and a mug of a drink he called mead. He called the stew Otis. I found out why when I got to Valhalla. We traded stories. He told a whopper about some thief named Thrym who once stole his hammer. He played a trick on Thrym to get it back. Pretended to be the woman Thrym wanted to marry. Bridal gown and all. Just before the ceremony, Thrym gave his bride the stolen hammer as a token of his love. Thor grabbed it and bashed Thrym in the head. Took out the groomsmen, the guests, and the cake, too. You might think hearing that story would put me on guard, but for some reason I trusted the big fella, and he trusted me. When I asked if I could try his hammer, he let out a snort of laughter punctuated with a colossal fart. Be my guest! I passed out from the strain of trying to lift it. When I came to, he and his hammer were gone, but he left a note behind. Trouble is, back then I couldn't read, so I just tucked the paper in my pocket. Not long after, my hammering skill got me a job driving steel spikes for the railroad. Mile after mile, month after month, I pounded track into place. I was the best worker of all. Until the day a smooth-talking, scar-faced salesman rode into town. He was selling steam-powered drills he claimed were faster and stronger than any steel-driving man. I couldn't read, but I saw the writing on the wall. His machine was going to put me and plenty of others out of work. I had no choice but to try to show him up. I bet him that, in one day's time, my hammer and I could lay more track, and through a mountain no less, than his machine. If he won, the railroad would buy his machines. If I won, he would leave and never come back. He took my bet. That night, my redheaded friend showed up at my tent. John Henry, he said. I know this salesman. He's a, expletives deleted, trickster, and, expletives deleted, tricksters don't play fair. So I'm going to lend you something to even the odds. He took off his belt and looped it around my waist. The minute it touched my skin, power surged through my veins. He laid his hammer in my hands. This time, I wielded it with ease. At dawn, I strode toward the tunnel. That scar-faced salesman raised an eyebrow when he saw the hammer. Well, he said, this just got interesting. Here's what happened next. We competed, I won, and then I died. I landed here in Valhalla with the hammer in my hand and the red-headed man's note in my pocket. A pretty lady on a strange, smoky-looking horse read it to me. This man is my son. Treat him right. If you don't, I'll bash your heads in. It was signed Thor. And that's how I learned who my real daddy was. Loki. Type, God, born of two giants. Homeworld, Asgard. Appearance, messy hair in shades of red, yellow, and brown. Handsome, except for a horribly scarred face and lips marred by pierce holes. Family, the father of Hel, Fenris Wolf, the world serpent Jormungand, Narvi, and Vali, among others. The mother of the eight-legged steed, Sleipnir. How's that for dysfunctional? Best known for being a trickster, magician, and shapeshifter. This smooth talker is very dangerous. Currently, as punishment for engineering the death of the god Baldur, he is lashed to boulders and tortured by venom dripping onto his face from a serpent's mouth. Still, he somehow manages to get around and cause trouble throughout the worlds. Dealing with a Deal Breaker by Broker the Dwarf. That Loki, he's some kind of handsome, huh? Until you see the scars on his face and the little pinholes above and below his lips. Bet you don't know how he got those holes. Cop a seat on that boulder and I'll tell you about it. So Loki, one day he's bored. He breaks into Thor's place to muck around with the Thunder God's stuff. Not too smart if you ask me. Anyway, Thor's not home, but his wife, Siv, is. Now Siv, she's this gorgeous platinum blonde. Well, not platinum so much as gold. Real pretty hair, though, and wicked long. Loki sneaks up behind her with a knife. She doesn't hear him because she's asleep. He cuts off her hair, which was a rotten thing to do on account of she was so proud of it. She wakes up, sees she's pretty much bald, and starts crying her eyes out. Who walks in then but Thor? Let me tell you, he's not the brightest coal in the kiln, if you get my drift. But even he can make out what's got Siv all upset. I mean, Loki is standing there with a knife in one hand and Siv's hair in the other. Calling Captain Obvious, am I right? So Loki's caught red-handed. But he's a persuasive guy. He tells Thor, who is ready to pound him to a pulp with his fists, that he'll get Siv a wig that'll look even better than her real hair. Thor says, okay, because what else is he going to do? Let his wife go around bald and crying? Not hardly. Only one place Loki can get a fine piece of craftsmanship like that, and that's right here in Nidavellir. So he hops on the tree at Asgard, changes branches at Alfheim, and gets off at Nabby's tavern. He asks around and finds a couple of dwarves, Ilvaldi's boys, to take the job. They make Siv a wig, and just to show off, throw in a magic spear and a ship that folds up so small it fits in a pocket. You think Loki hoofs it back to Thor's palace with the goods? Nah. He's having a good time in Nidavellir. That's when me and my bro Sindri come into the story. Loki saunters into our shop and starts poking around. He shows us the wig, the spear, and the ship, and bets his head, no joke, his head, we can't make anything that good. Sindri and me take the bet because we know our stuff is insanely awesome. So we're firing up the kiln, hammering some metal, kind of showing off for the god. He watches for a few minutes, then says he's going back to Asgard. What he really does? Turns into a horsefly and gets all up in our faces while we're working. We had, like, no clue it was him bugging us, but it didn't even matter. What we made rocked. First thing we pumped out was this boar with golden bristles that could run wicked fast. Second thing was a gold ring that makes 8 copies of itself every 9th day. How fantastic is that? But the best thing we made was this hammer that always hits its target and boomerangs back to its owner. So we bring the stuff to Asgard, looking for Loki because he never showed to collect. We're confident, right? So we also bring a bag to put Loki's head in. Not that we think he's really going to pay up. Surprise, surprise, even though all the gods say the boar and the ring and the hammer are the coolest things ever and we totally win the bet, Loki tries to squirm out of the deal. I just promised you can take my head off, Loki says, but I didn't say anything about my neck. Don't touch my neck. How are we supposed to cut a guy's head off without touching his neck? You're a cheat and a lying weasel, Sindri says to him. So here's what we're going to do. We're going to make sure you can't talk anyone else into making stuff for you. Sindri and I jump in. Loki doesn't see it coming and falls like a ton of bricks. The other gods, they just look the other way while Sindri takes out his needle and thread and, well, you've seen Loki's mouth. Sure, he can talk now. Eventually he managed to tug the stitches out of his lips, but he wasn't saying a single thing when we left that day. In case you're wondering, we gave the boar to Frey, the ring to Odin, and the hammer to Thor. You don't hear much about the first two, but yeah, the hammer we made is that hammer. Frey. Type, God. Homeworld. First Vanaheim, then Asgard after the Aesir-Vanir War, now rules over Alfheim. Appearance. Blue-eyed, blonde, and absurdly good-looking in a tan, unshaven, outdoorsy kind of way. Leans toward flannel shirts, well-worn jeans, and hiking boots. Radiates warmth, peace, and contentment. Family. Son of Njord, the sea god, twin brother of Freya, husband of the frost giantess, Gerd. Best known for being the god of spring and summer and the lord of Alfheim. He's sunshine on a cloudy day. When it's cold outside, he's the month of May. Favorite weapon, Sumarbrander, the sword of summer. Yay! Unfortunately, he gave it away. Boo! A deer antler will do in a pinch. Animal companion. When he isn't sailing his ship, which can be folded up to fit in a pocket and always has a favorable breeze, he can be seen riding a shining dwarf-made boar. The Rap Duel of Jack the Sword and Frey. Jack. I'm Jack, the Sword of Summer, Sumerbrander, Blade of Frey. That is, I was his until he tossed me away. Frey. Jack, I did you wrong. You know I'm feeling the guilt. Jack. Yeah, right. Forget you, man. Talk to my hilt. Frey. Come on, Slice. Give me a chance. At least let me explain why I passed you off to Skirnir. Jack. I know why. You were insane. You sat on Odin's throne to search for Freya, your lost sister. A giantess caught your eye. So much for Freya, you just dissed her. Frey. Gerd was gorgeous. Total hottie. I dream of her still. Shining face. Lovely hair. Jack, I think I'm going to be ill. Frey. I know you suffered, Blade of Frey, Sword of Summer, Sumabrander. Jack, the worst is yet to come when I'm with my new commander. Frey, you mean Surt at Ragnarok? Jack, the Black One of Muspelheim, on the Day of Doom, he'll wield me. Frey, and free the wolf, chaos time. Jack, boiling seas, blood-red skies. Frey, gods will vanish, giants rise. Jack, I'll be sad to see you go. Frey, will you really? Jack, really? No. Frey, destiny is destiny, we all have our parts to play. Jack, I'll act mine now then, nature boy, and say, see you later, Frey. Frey, there'll never be another quite like you, Sword of Summer. Our paths may cross again. If not, goodbye, old friend. Freya. Type, goddess. Homeworld, originally from Vanaheim, sent to Asgard after the Aesir-Vanir War, now back in Vanaheim. Appearance, bathed in and emanates golden warmth. Long blonde hair braided in a single thick plait. Lithe figure clad in a white halter top, mid-length skirt, and a gold belt. Carries a knife and key ring on the belt. Family. Daughter of Njord, twin sister of Frey. Best known for presiding over Folkvanger, where half the slain heroes spend their afterlife. Sheds tears of red gold. Expert practitioner of Alfsader. Has a passion for love, pleasure, and fine dwarven-crafted jewelry. Her signature piece, Brisingamen, is a very sparkly ruby and diamond lacework necklace of unsurpassed beauty. My Chat with Freya by Snorri Sturluson. When Helgi scheduled an interview for me with the lovely goddess Freya, I found myself wishing I'd spent more time battling in the fields and less dining on slabs of Cybermere. But then I recalled that because I was dead, my physique wouldn't change no matter how much I exercised. I settled for spritzing myself liberally with my favorite lady-pleasing cologne, Thane for Men. I was about to make my way through Yggdrasil to Vanaheim when Thor stopped me, shoved an envelope in my hand, and ordered me to deliver it to Freya. Naturally, I was only too happy to help. With my raven scribe at my side, I arrived in the throne room of Sesrumnir, Freya's mansion, at the appointed hour. Instead of the goddess, however, I found a scruffy-looking individual wearing a multi-hued short-sleeve garment bearing the words, "Keep calm and Folkvanger on," lounging on the dais. Man.
Whoa, dude. Are you supposed to be in here?
Snorri Sturluson. Yes. The goddess Freya herself is to honor me with her presence. Man.
Cool. I'm Miles. And judging by your body odor,
leans close and sniffs Snorri Sturluson. I'm guessing you're a fart elf. Snorri Sturluson, indignant.
I am a Thane.
Miles.
Sorry, my bad. Well, Thane, I'm not sure when Freya's going to be home. Can I get you a beverage item or some salty snackage while you're waiting?
I was saved from being rude by the arrival of Freya in her cat-drawn chariot. She was every bit as radiant as I remembered her. With her was a young woman, newly deceased by her bewildered look. Freya.
Snorri, darling, it's been too long.
Air kisses Snorri Sturluson.
Mwah, mwah.
Miles, be a love and take... What was your name again, dear?
Woman.
Agnes.
Freya.
Hmm.
Taps finger on lips.
Are you quite certain Agnes is the name you want for the rest of your death?
Agnes.
What do you mean, the rest of my death?
Freya.
Maybe something a little perkier. Let's see.
Strokes cats.
I think Kitty will do nicely. That's what we'll call you, my dear.
Kitty.
Who are you people?
Freya.
Miles, explain everything to Kitty, will you?
Miles. I'm on it.
Fires a finger gun at Snorri Sturluson.
Catch you later, Thane.
Here, kitty, kitty, kitty.
Kitty.
Seriously, what is going on?
Freya.
Oh, darling, don't you see? You're dead.
Kitty.
I'm dead?
Miles, grabbing Kitty in a headlock and giving her knuckle noogies.
Come on, Kit Kat, it's not so bad.
Kitty.
I'm dead? Miles and Kitty depart.
Freya. Sweet girl. She makes designer eyewear. Slips on bejeweled cat-eyed spectacles.
When she died, I just knew I had to have her for Folkvanger.
Snorri Sturluson. Valhalla's loss, I'm sure.
How did she perish?
Freya. A gas explosion. She died while dragging someone from the fire.
Speaking of gas, sniffs Snorri Sturluson. You're rather pungent.
Snorri Sturluson.
Am I?
Freya. Yes.
Do take a step back, dear. My eyes are starting to water red gold.
Snorri Sturluson. My apologies. Before I forget, I have a message for you from Thor.
Freya reads Thor's note.
Freya tossed the note aside after reading it. The recording raven caught a glimpse of two words, hammer and missing.
Oh, Odin's eye, not again.
Snorri, sweetie, we'll have to reschedule. Thor needs to borrow something of mine right away. Can you deliver it to him?
Snorri Sturluson. Your wish is my command, my lady. What am I to bring?
Freya. My magic cloak of falcon feathers. He has to fly to Jotunheim to search for...
Well, I'm not at liberty to say.
Snorri Sturluson. Might I use the cloak to return to Asgard?
Freya. I'd like nothing better than to allow that.
Snorri Sturluson.
Wonderful!
Freya.
But no. I'm concerned your odor would negatively affect the feathers. You understand, of course. Carry it at arm's length, will you?
Off you go now. There's a love. As of publication time, my interview with the dazzling goddess had not been rescheduled. Skirnir. Type, God. Homeworlds, Alfheim and Asgard. Appearance,